Welcome to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with awesome educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. I'm really lucky. I have Travis Leif here today.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. And I want to tell everyone a little bit about you first.
Go ahead. Sound okay? Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, Travis is the Harrisburg School District's Innovative Programs Director. I love that title. And he was the recipient of the Thai Technology Leader Award for the state of South Dakota, the whole state.
The whole state.
He co-hosts the Movers and Makers podcast and helped host over 8 ed camps in South Dakota in the past 3 years. He's a busy guy.
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment, really. And I follow Travis on Twitter about his work with Makerspacers and personalized learning. And lucky me, I got to meet him at the Ties conference, even went out in the cold with him.
It was fun.
Not for me. It was pretty cool. we really had loads of fun then. And so I really was really excited that you wanted to join me. So welcome, Travis.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and just share a conversation with you about, you know, all the things that are happening in our district.
Oh, I'm really excited because I did interview Darren too. So it's kind of fun to kind of get it from both ends and what's happening. But before we do that, let's just find out a little bit about you. How did you get to Harrisburg? What is your background?
Yeah, well, my background's unique because when I graduated in 2010 from the University of Sioux Falls, I went into teaching right away and taught fourth grade at a low social economical school, Lowell Science, Math, and Technology. It was an elementary school in Sioux Falls. Fourth grade, loved it. It was just a lot of fun to be in my first classroom, have my first group of students, and it was a great year. But I had a unique opportunity prior to teaching and all of that. I was a travel softball coach for several years, and so my alma mater at USF was going to make a change in coaching, and we were transitioning from NAIA to Division II. And so I got an opportunity to go back and be the head coach and help us transition from the NAIA ranks to the Division II NCAA ranks. And I just couldn't pass that up. I was single at that time. My passion was with coaching and teaching. They kind of go together just naturally. And so I thought this was probably an opportunity that I could take a hold of, see where it goes, but I could always come back to teaching because that really was where my love was. So I was at USF as the head softball coach for roughly 2 years. I transitioned us and started getting us on the right path. My last year there, we missed the conference tournament by a game and a half. The team had never made conference tournament, and that was our second year in Division II. So we had some pieces in place to be successful, and I felt like I had done my job. I had transitioned us. I got us put in a good position for the next coach. And in that process, I got married, and I did not want to live on the road as much as I was. It was easy to be a coach and travel, but I didn't want to live on the road. So then I got married, and my wife's a teacher, and she's like, "Hey, Harrisburg, it's got an opening for a technology integrationist role. I think you would be really good at that. You love tech. You should think about that. Then our schedules are the same." And I know what she was trying to do. She was trying to get me home more. But at the end of the day, that's where I wanted to be as well. Family is super important to me. And so I applied in Harrisburg and got the technology integrationist position at one of our elementary schools. And there I was there for a year. So that's kind of the background to how I got to Harrisburg. And my wife and I have a 2.5-year-old son, DJ. We adopted him about 2 years ago, and he keeps me busy and kind of is the pride and joy of our family.
Oh, I love it. So you said you were a technology integrationist. When did that start? How did that, you said that you went in there, but how did you get the background and everything about that? That's kind of different.
it was super different because my background was elementary ed. And the school that I was at my first year, we had iPods and we blogged on those. And I had things happening in my classroom. But when I came back to the classroom after being out 2 years, really not having kind of the tech computer background, I spent a lot of time searching to find quality professional development. And where I found it was on Twitter. I got connected with some ed chats and I was on fire. I got connected with some powerful educators who had been in the field doing that type of work for several years, learned from them, took pieces and pieced our things together to make it work in our building. And we really had some things going. And that year, my building principal and I, we had a plan to renovate the library and put in a makerspace thanks to Laura Fleming. Shannon Miller was a part of that process. And my building principal decided to leave our district and go back to Iowa to make more money, but also his family was there. And so I was scared that after a year of all this planning to do this, that I was going to have to sit another year for another building principal to come in. And what if that building leader didn't support this? And here are all these things that I've learned and I've wanted to do, and I had the autonomy to do really anything. I was scared. And that's when Darren came into the picture, because Darren's at one of our elementary or middle schools. And he came in and he said, hey, I have an integration position. You'd be full-time integrationist, just working with teachers in classrooms. And I really want a makerspace in my library. So we would really like to have you come and help us do that. And I didn't have a middle school background. I was scared of middle schoolers, to be truthfully honest. I didn't really want to go there. But I did, and it was the best professional move I had made. Working with Darren and his staff was incredible, and that really helped shape kind of the tech piece for me of how we can bring tech into classrooms and make it meaningful learning experiences rather than just a device that kids are typing on or researching on. And so I worked with Darren and his staff for 2 years. In that process, I was getting my master's in administration as well. So Darren knew that my ultimate goal was to be a building principal, have kind of my own elementary. And so he knew at some point he was going to lose me, but the 2 years that I was there was a blast. It was a lot of fun. And now to see what his building is doing in our district is just encouraging to know that it's continuing on.
Well, let me just tell you, I interviewed Darren Elwin, because you didn't say his last name.
Yes, right? Thank you.
And Darren, I've known Darren, I think, before I knew you.
Yeah.
And that's how I found you and on Twitter. I mean, everyone I'm talking about is on Twitter, so it's been kind of great. And one of the things that's really exciting is watching you grow. I mean, I saw you right from the beginning when you started, because I know Laura and I know Shannon. It's really fun. You started pulling all the pieces together, and I'm over here like a fly on the wall watching you do that. It's really cool. So then you were there, and now you're at the district. Is that right?
That's right. So I was at the middle school for 2 years. Then I was an assistant principal in the district for 1 year. So last year, I was an AP in our elementary that we did our first cohort of personalized learning. And so then this year, that was just a unique role. We had some situations in our district that we needed two APs for 1 year. And so I jumped on board and did that. I loved it. I think at some point I'll probably end up wanting to have my own building and being a building principal. But right now, this first year of the innovative programs director in our district and kind of having a district view and a district vision has been really good for me. It's been a lot of fun. It's already Christmas break almost, and I don't feel like I've worked a single day yet. It's just been a blast, you know.
Well, it's because you're doing what you love.
You've always
been really passionate, Travis. Yeah. I mean, I just remember talking to you about the studios, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But it's like you get an idea, and nobody will stop you. You're just so excited, right?
Yes.
And what's lucky is you have people like Darren and others in your district. It's amazing that you're willing to take some risks. It's not easy to completely change everything. So you know, there's a connection with personalized learning. We've done that. But how did you get everyone on board? How do you do this?
It's super hard. This isn't easy. This isn't for the faint of hearts. there are nights where you lose sleep. last night being one of those. Not everybody is happy. If you think you're going to go into this role or changing, you know, school structures and everybody's going to be happy, you're wrong. The one thing we all have in common is a school experience. Good, bad, or ugly, we all have an experience with school. And everybody has an opinion on that and how schools should operate and work. And so when you have that much of a dynamic, it's super hard. I mean, I would never walk into my doctor's office and tell my doctor, you know what? I know you tested me for this, but I really want you to do this for me because I've done enough reading right now that research shows I probably am going to have this happen to me. Like, we don't do that to our doctors or our physicians, but we do that it happens very often in our education world because people all have an opinion because of their experience. And so this is hard work, but our district has really paved a way for innovation in the idea that kids deserve better. Our kids deserve more. And so it started about 8 years ago with our high school. They wanted to change the structures of time in the high school. And how did that work and add more flexibility to time and classes? In that whole process, they came across customization and customized learning. For me, customization and personalized learning are interchangeable, but to some, they're not. Some, they feel there's a drastic difference. In my opinion, they're not. They're the same. But at the high school, they started 5 years ago. We graduated our first graduating class last year. That went through that. But our first year of implementation was hard. It was ugly. Every freshman got into the program. Every freshman was pushed into it without choice, and there was not a lot of soft skill building for them. And so for 9 years, they've been told when to go to the bathroom, when to eat lunch, when to turn in a paper, when the test is, and what's going to be on the test. And now their freshman year, we've turned their world upside down and said, you're in charge of your learning. You're going to have to prove that you understand these concepts through artifacts and showing mastery. And so that was super hard. I refer back to your book, Make Learning Personal, and that, you know, to really have a system-wide change, you have to start in the lower elementary grades and let those parents be your flagship carriers. They're going to carry the flag through the middle school, and then they're going to ask the hard questions of, what are you doing for my learner when they're in high school? But we kind of did it backwards, but we had a very bold school board who stuck it out. Through the hard times, they stayed strong. They knew where they wanted to go. So we offered a choice at the high school. And that's when the middle school and elementary got brought on and said, hey, we need to start doing this at the lower grades. So we did it at the middle school in sixth grade. We started last year and now we have sixth, seventh. And then in one more year, we'll be sixth, seventh, eighth. And at the elementary, we looked at it from a whole different lens and said, what makes a second grader a second grader? Besides being in school 175, 180 days, what justifies them at the end of the school year to be a second grader? And so we looked at it from that lens of saying, you know what, let's meet the right learner with the right content, with the right facilitator at the right time and give them voice and choice in how they prove their learning and have them be a part of the learning process rather than us telling them, here's the process. And so at the elementary, we've really focused on doing away with the grade levels and really focused on the learner as a whole child and what do they need for their education.
So I'm going to stop you there for a moment because you mentioned you got rid of grade levels. That scares a lot of people. And so what I want to kind of have you do is give a design of what that means in elementary school. I mean, what does it look like now?
Absolutely. So when you think of that, I think of a graphic that Ken Grover from Utah has shared with me. And his graphic starts at the base of the triangle, and it starts with the belief that all learners can learn, or all students can learn. If you believe that, then the next thing we have to do is we have to put in an invisible structure in place to support those learners because they're elementary. They still need some structure and support. But what is that? What's that instructional structure that we need? The next thing that we have to then look at is the structure in which we teach. So the pedagogy, how are we teaching? What are the best practices? And then the final piece of that puzzle of the top of the triangle is a tool. What is the tool that supports all of this? And that's the technology. too often we try to find the tool first before we get the best practices. We did it the other way around. We said, what are the best practices that we are already doing in our classrooms with our students? And how do we put those into a personalization way to personalize learning to meet all learners? So we did that. We started with the best practices. And so we used the daily 5 reading structure and the daily 3 math structure. And that's the invisible structure that our learners work in. Inside of that, the learners have total autonomy in how they show their learning for their masteries. So their I can statement might be in math, I can add and subtract 20 fluently using several strategies. We don't tell them the strategies. We give them coaching sessions to introduce them to different strategies. But at the end of the day, they own it. They pick the strategy and they prove how do they know that. And that could be through a poster. That could be through an audio recording. That could be through a math video that they make. How they show their learning is completely different. But it's taking that structure and saying, okay, they're going to be in this invisible structure, but we're going to empower them to drive their learning in that structure.
So I love this idea of them showcasing what they know. And so do you do portfolios? And how early do you start?
Yeah, so we have a learning management system that allows us to have learners put in artifacts of their learning. And so it's not a separate portfolio piece for us. It's more of them putting in those artifacts to prove their learning inside our learning management system. And what our hope is long-term is that when they get to middle school, that's when we can really start to build their portfolio of learning, because then by that time, we hope we've built a learner who knows what they need when they're struggling, can advocate for themselves, and can put together a really good piece of learning artifact that will show mastery for their standards.
Yeah. One thing I found is it's very hard for young children to know what is good, you know, what is really appropriate.
Absolutely.
So they might need that with the structure. I'm really into Vygotsky, you know, the idea of having the support of others. So do you have like examples for them so they can kind of see what that you're looking for, or do you just have them kind of share and then you give feedback?
So right now, because we're in year 2, we don't have a lot of quality exemplars for them to review. As learners make them and we're like, yes, this is a really good one, we're holding on to those. But right now we give feedback and then they go back and they strive for accuracy by fixing that and applying that feedback. So the whole idea, another foundational piece of us is the habits of mind, the 16 habits, really trying to bring those in and making sure our learners have those soft skills. Because just the other day I was talking to a parent and I said, in 2030, our kindergartners will go out into this world. I can't tell you what this world is going to be like in 2030, but I can tell you those 16 soft skills, those 16 habits, they're going to need to know persistence. They're going to need to know how to strive for accuracy or think about their thinking, or even how do I manage my impulses when I'm working with somebody that I dislike, but I do need to still get along and work with them. All of those things, no matter what they go into, no matter what our world is in 2030, those things are not changing. Those things will always be there. And I think it's up to us in the educational world to really strive to bring that forward for our learners so that when they leave us, they're prepared for the world.
Yeah, I know a lot of adults that could use that.
Yeah,
right? I mean, we didn't, well, you know, what happens is that when you're brought up in a system of compliancy, then you're not really building those skills. And someone's told you what to do and told you what college to go to and told you what you're going to do for your life. And then you're unhappy. That's why we have the high dropout rate out in college. So
absolutely. I mean, I think of the new data that's just come out from Gallup in 2016, you know, I mean, it hasn't changed from 2013, but 2016, mm-hmm. 74% of fifth graders are engaged in school. And by the time they get to high school, it's 34%. I mean, we're doing something wrong.
It should be switched, right?
Absolutely.
They become more engaged as they're in school, really. They
yes.
should be.
The love of learning should be instilled in them that they love what they're doing.
So have you noticed since you started this that you're getting a more engaged learner I mean, are they talking about it more? They're all excited and the parents are really excited that it's happening.
Yeah, right now it's fun right now. I mean, it's fun and it's also somewhat stressful. The next 2 weeks here in our school district, we are hosting parent shadow days. So the parents can come in and shadow their learner and get a look from their learner's perspective. And it's a lot of fun to hear parents talk about what their learner's talking about at home, how excited they are to come to school. Down to like some parents are like, my kid did not want to get out of bed last year. I had to pull them out. To now they're ready to go in the morning. They want to come. They want to learn. And a lot of it is accredited to our learning facilitators. Our facilitators are incredible in the sense of really tapping into the learner as a whole child, but also really looking at empowering them and saying, you're in charge of this learning. When a learner's off task, that's not necessarily a reflection of the teacher or the facilitator, but we got to have a conversation with that learner of, are they doing what's best for their learning right now? And let's have that conversation rather than saying, you know, this teacher might not have good classroom management. That might not even be the case. It just might be talking to the learner and saying, are you doing what's best for you?
So how did you get your teachers on board like this? Because I met many of your, you know, some of the teachers and
yeah,
they're amazing. I mean, it takes work to change even their thinking because they went through the system and they only knew a certain way too.
Absolutely. You know, at the elementary, we spent a lot of time with our first cohort. We went on school visits. We tried to design this model that we believe in and we've implemented in our district. And so we spent a lot of time with them. And I spent a lot of time being from the coaching ranks, like building teams is what I love to do. Like taking the pieces of the puzzle and saying, here, how do we build a really powerful team to be prepared for whatever's coming? And so I was able to take those four learning facilitators in our first cohort and just work with them, have them understand how each other are as people and what are our non-negotiables as a team? What are things that, you know what, we all have different personalities, but guess what? Every learning studio is going to look exactly the same. That's scary for elementary teachers because some elementary teachers have Pinterest-loving classrooms full of color, but it was super important for us to have the learning studios look exactly the same because the learners were going in between all the studios based on what they needed. So it wasn't no longer a classroom that was designed for one class. It was a learning studio that said, if I went into this learning studio, this is what I'm getting when I go in there. This is what I need. So we had to change their mindsets of we're a team. Everything's going to look very similar in the sense of the learning studio structure because the learners are going to fluently move between all four learning studios because we're not going to focus on the grade level.
Well, so we have to talk about the learning studios because that's different than what we've been doing for personalized learning. It's basically what you're doing is creating an environment
yes.
where learning is first,
yep.
right? And making it so it looks the same is not really personalized. Right.
Yep.
But so what you're doing is you're personalizing what they're doing. It's coming from them.
Yes. Okay. So the learning is personalized. The learning studios are learner-centered or learner-focused to make sure that what's in there is all about the learner. So we don't have teacher desks in there. It's all learning spaces that will accommodate a learner based on what they need. So inside a learning studio, we'll have a what we call group flex or the learning lounge, and that's pizza booths. We got pizza booths from a Pizza Hut that was closing down. And so that's where learners will go to collaborate and talk and share and do projects together. Another part of the learning studio is the quiet zone. So this is where learners will go and just kind of read a book or do things that they just need their own space. Because learners still need that in a flexible learning environment. You still need kind of your space or your area. That's where they can get that. We have a seminar area where a group of learners can have a direct instruction from a facilitator if they need it, if the group is large enough. We have a coaching center where the learners, it's a 1-on-5, so more of your guided math, guided reading group looking style. But we call it a coaching center because we're coaching the learners through their learning. And then we have a personal flex area out in the middle of our kind of area where all four studios are. And that's where the learners can go if they just need somewhere else just to work. Just, I need some personal area, personal flex to do something that I need. And so it's really about building those environments that support them as a learner. So they understand that when I'm in the quiet zone, this is what I need to do as a learner. And so all four learning studios have those same environments so that the learners know when I go in there, they all operate the same way.
Okay, I get that. So how big are these learning studios and how many? Is it open more so there's more children can move around, or are they just like the size of a classroom?
Same size of a classroom. Okay. Exciting. We're going to build a new school in about 2 years probably. And we're probably going to be able to design that a little differently, knowing what we need for our learners. But our current structure is still classrooms. They look like classrooms, or they are classrooms. But we've revamped them inside to make a learning environment that is focused on the learner and their needs.
So you have the makers spaces, and I love the idea of the studios. Do you put the makerspaces in the studios?
So we do. In some of our learning studios, we have a creation area, a creation zone, and that's where the learners have all the supplies to get creative in how they show their artifact for learning. So author's purpose, they might make an animation and show characters and what the author was trying to explore with their characters and setting. We might have some learners do posters, or some of our learners have done 3D designs, and we've printed on 3D printers, really focused around the learner in that creation area, as well as some of that being put into our media centers. So our learners have access to those as well during kind of their library time in the elementary. And in our middle school, they kind of have access to that 24/7.
So it's more of what they need when they need it. And you even have green screens. I know that they have that at the middle school. So you're some of the projects that you're designing, it'd be kind of fun to put them in the blog post so we can share what you're doing. Because that's Absolutely. What we do. We do a separate blog post so everybody can have an idea of what it looks like. Because it's really...
It's hard.
And are you having people come to visit now?
Oh, yeah. We, by Christmas time, we'll have reached 150 visitors from about 20 to 22 schools. So in our spring semester is filling up. We only offer visits on Fridays, two Fridays a month, to try to help not take away from instructional time, and to be very, very aware of our learning facilitators, not to put too much pressure on them, because visits are a little more stressful for us. But we do believe in sharing, and we try to help as many school districts that want to look at this type of learning and provide all the resources we can from our experience. Because I would tell you, we did not get here alone. We got here from help. And Chaska Pioneer Ridge Middle School up in Chaska, Minnesota was a huge resource for us. And they've helped us along the way. But now we're to the point where we're starting to pave kind of our own way based on what we know and what we've been living. But we didn't get there just by us saying, hey, let's try this. We went and saw schools, and we visited schools in Maine, and Cornville Charter out in Maine is an incredible school that we model a lot of things after as well at the elementary level. So the least we can do is help other schools and have conversations with their teams and their administrators.
Well, we'll put a link to how they could sign up if they want.
And, absolutely.
And also how to get a hold of you. We'll put your contact information, because you put a lot in just a few minutes, I can tell you. I can hear the coach in you, which is kind of cool that you've coaching them along and helping them. And you do ed camps and your podcast. I know you do a lot of sharing that way also, right?
I come back to how I got back into teaching. I got back into teaching from support. I got on Twitter, I got connected, and all these people poured their lives into me. I think of Kristen Daniels from Minneapolis area. She was huge on project-based learning and PD. And I picked her brain, and she was a huge mentor to me just to get started and what Twitter chats look like and how I could grow as a professional. And I would tell you in the 5 years now that I've been in Harrisburg, I have grown so much because of great people around me, yourself being one of those. I mean, the connections that we've made and the things that I've been able to ask and pick your brain and have conversation around, Barbara, has just been incredible, because we don't do this alone. And so EdCamps are a way that I can bring support to teachers in a free manner and celebrate them because they're in the trenches every day, working hard, trying to do what's best for kids. And so EdCamps is just a way that I can give back to them, say, hey, let's honor you today. Let's celebrate your learning. Let's celebrate what you're doing. And then on top of it, let's just throw a huge party. Let's just have fun on a Saturday, learning together and giving away prizes. And so that's the least I can do is help others and do that, because I've been so blessed to have so many good role models and mentors in my life that it's helped me here.
Well, Christian is a friend of mine also, so I know her.
Yeah.
I've known her for years. And so it's really cool that when you mentioned everyone you're mentioning, I know. And that's one of the reasons I put the podcast together myself, is because I'm not in the classroom. And I'm finding that if we don't get everyone's voice out there that are actually making the difference, and also share who's helped them, that's what we do. We're giving back.
Yeah.
We give back the best way we can. Well, Travis, this has been wonderful. I hope I can come up sometime and visit, because it'll be fun to actually see it in action. But I do take all of Darren's videos and show.
Yes. And that's awesome.
And he's even doing a conference in Honduras he's talking about. So, I mean, I, you know, when you think of Harrisburg, South Dakota, it's way up there. Nobody, you know, they're going to know about you. We're going to make sure they know about you.
You know, we're very proud of the things that we're able to do. And that's because of the support from our school board, our superintendent, and then down to our building leaders that are just saying, you know what, we recognize that something needs to change, and we're willing to take that risk. Like you said in the beginning, like, we've taken some huge risks, some huge things, and we're seeing huge benefits to it. But it's not easy. It's not something that you got to go in lightly with. You got to have a plan. You got to have a team, and you got to have support. And I would say, because we have a school board that stands behind us, we have a superintendent who really pushes the envelope with us and says, you know, I'm going to get out of your way. You just tell me what you need. That helps, having that type of leadership at the top to support you. So Harrisburg's just an awesome place to be. And like you said, we're in South Dakota. You know, I it's always fun to talk with people, and they're like, South Dakota, you're doing what? And it's like, we are, we can do this. And other districts can do it. Like, it doesn't matter where you're at, you can do it. It just takes a bold move and some vision to accomplish it.
Well, you are, and I'm so lucky you were here to share this with me, and we'll be sharing it with the world, because we'll be following your journey and probably talking again in sometime later.
That'd be awesome. We'd love to have that. So thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Travis.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. This has been a wonderful podcast with Travis Lape. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Travis Lape. Make sure you visit barbarabray.net to learn more about Travis and makerspaces, EdCamps, personalized learning, so much more. Look for the complimentary blog post with all the resources and links where you can leave a comment for Travis. You see, these conversations are all part of a bigger picture to transform education. I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and, you know, share or retweet the post on Twitter using the hashtag Rethink_learning. So please subscribe to the podcast and the website at barbarabray.net so you can join the conversations.